Welcome to another message from the heart. Life-changing messages from the heart of Pastor Darren Brown, Senior Pastor of Coast Church, Wumbai. And now, here's Pastor Brown with another message from the heart.
Morning. I've entitled my message, The Unexpected Journey. Who likes unexpectedness? I don't. I'm a grey nomad now, but so we're on our way up to Cairns, so I've got caravan parks booked all the way up. I don't like to sleep on the side of the road unexpectedly. I like to know where I'm going, but God put us on an unexpected journey. And though Cherie and I are part of this journey, the story's not really about us, but it's more about God, how he wove three people together in a beautiful tapestry over about 15 years. And for the bulk of it, Cherie and I knew nothing. It's more a story about God when he does the unexpected in our lives that we go, wow. But that's really silly when something like unexpected in my life happens that I should go, wow, because the God I serve created an ever-expanding universe. The further man can look, all he's seeing is more of God. He created something so small that in our DNA there's 75 million four-letter codes or 3 billion one-letter codes that make up a human being. No matter how, if you look out or you look in, God is there. So when something unexpectedly happens and we go, wow, I just sort of feel really foolish because the God I serve is so great and so powerful. But still, when he does something, it just blows our minds. It just absolutely blows our mind when he interacts with our life. Our great God so desires to interact with our lives on a daily basis. Cherie's a great believer that God provides parking spots. I once had a pastor said that he'd never failed to get a parking spot when he was with his wife. They might have driven around and the shops were shut, but then a parking spot would be there. But you know, but Cherie believes that because she believes that he's so interested in her finest detail, that he's there. I mean, I don't pray for parking spots, so I'm driving round and round, but Cherie normally gets one, so that's great. So where to start? This unexpected journey started in 2002 for us in the most unusual way. We'd sponsored Compassion Kids for, I don't know, for so long. And then in 2002, they sent us a boy. We had a policy. I had three daughters, so we sponsored girls. The girl had finished the program or the program collapsed, I wasn't sure. So Compassion just sent us a boy. We looked at him and go, that's not within our criteria. We had a criteria. So what we did, I used the word change him. But in other words, I was going to reject him. So I rang Compassion. I normally don't do something, but it wasn't in our thing. So I sort of said, no, I want to change him. And she's probably thinking, you want to reject him. And I said, we had a conversation and she said, even boys need sponsorship. We sponsored girls because in the third world, girls get a hard time. If you teach a girl to read or write and she becomes a mum, she'll teach her children to read or write. That was our philosophy. I thought my kids being girls would connect with girls, but we had a boy. But so we decided to take him. For 13 years, we sponsored this child. His name was Sunil Kumar Guguluth. He was the longest child we'd ever sponsored. We picked him up and put him through school and through university. We sent him money on a monthly basis. It wasn't hard to do. It was an automatic debit on my credit card. I didn't even know it would happen. At the end of the year, I got a tax statement and I used to claim him off on tax. We wrote letters to him. Mostly I did that. Maybe once on a good year, he got two letters. Sent him a birthday present and a Christmas thing. For me, sponsoring a child wasn't a huge part of my life. I mean, I had three teenage girls. We just went to a church that was being planted. We were on the board. We were active. Sunil was just the tiniest part of my life, but we did it faithfully. We planted a seed in someone's life. We knew we were changing a life, But we really didn't understand what we were doing in the spiritual realm. We had no idea. Who's got a sponsor child? Doesn't matter whether it's compassion or wherever, but you're changing a life. You're changing a life more than you will even begin to know. You may be blessed to visit. I'd never thought in 2002 that I'd ever meet Sunil. He was in India. It wasn't on Sheree's bucket list ever to go to India. Never. I'd been to Sri Lanka, so I was keen to go back there in 2000. I went to Sri Lanka. But Sheree, when you mentioned Sri Lanka or India, Tahiti, Bora Bora, Hawaii. Yes, India, no. So never in our wildest dreams did I ever thought we'd go there. We hardly ever thought of him. But you know this little fella? At 6 years old, he thought of us daily. Every day he prayed for us. Every day his thoughts were consumed with meeting us, with seeing us, with hugging us. He was from a very poor family, so his parents were working away from home, so he was sponsored in this school. He accredits us for everything good in his life. We tell him, no, it's not us. It's not us, it's God. If it wasn't us that sponsored you, it would have been one of yous. Then you'd have this amazing story, or someone else. But God had a plan for this person. He calls us Mum and Dad. I've got lots of Facebook friends who call me Mum and Dad. If somebody were to look at my Facebook page, they probably thought in the 70s I went to India and lived a very immoral life because I've got hundreds of children. But they're spiritual children. I mean, they call us that out of a sign of respect. Even when we were there in their churches, the pastors there called us Mum and Dad. I'd never met them before in my life, but to them, we were like their Mum and Dad out of sign of respect. The story of us rejecting him, actually, when Sunil wrote a book, and I told him that in the course of time, that I actually rejected you, because he was also rejected by his earthly mother. She tried to abort him. She took medicine to cause an abortion, didn't work. She did hard labour to abort him, it didn't work. God had a plan for this seed that was planted. He had a plan that he's going to do something great through this seed. At this time, we knew nothing about this. So he was rejected by his mum because she had two girls. She thought she was going to have another girl. And girls in India with the dowry are a burden. When I found out about the dowry, a dowry basically is giving your son-in-law 10 years of his wages. Could you imagine doing that in Australia? Giving your future son-in-law 10 years of his wages? We'd be broke. I've got three girls. I'd never retire. I'd be working till I'm 150. But praise God, we don't have a dowry here. That's why he was rejected. Sunil was just there, so happy that somebody had sponsored him in this school. His auntie got him into the school, which is we'll build on that a bit later. In 2009, an American vicar named Ryan Street was travelling through India with a friend from an American Episcopalian church, and he was looking to do a long-term ministry in India. He came across Sunil in the Compassion program. Sunil, at 14 or 15, was running a prayer group. The vicar thought, wow, a bit unusual for a kid of that age. So he sort of sat there in his mind, and then he went back to America. He came back in 2012 to further do some more investigation. You know, what's God calling this little seed that we planted that had started to grow with a prayer group, you know, that we partnered with Compassion, had grown into a prayer group. When he came back 3 years later, the prayer group had expanded. Sunil, back in his own village, had started, with the help of his older brother, to plant churches. And at this stage, they were in about, 10 villages doing a little church. At that stage, God spoke to the vicar and said, this is the boy that you will be working through. This seed was growing. It was just growing, you know, exponentially. And I knew nothing about it. Every month my credit card would be debited. Every year, if I remembered, I'd send him a letter. I'd send him a photo of us. It was always hard trying to get all the girls and us together to have a photo because somebody said, I don't like myself in that shot. But I said, it doesn't matter. We're never going to meet this person. He's never going to see what you look like. It doesn't matter. You know, so we sent a picture. We sent pictures, you know, and he valued these pictures. I didn't know, but on Compassion on their school, they got like a board and the sponsors have their, you know, photos of the people that are sponsoring them there and they pray for them and they just love them because we're changing a life. When you're changing a life for eternity when you sponsor someone. In 2014, after the vicar went back, they decided that, you know, the group of Indian group that he's with is called the Banyara. They're the lowest of the lowest. They used to be gypsies, so they're even that lower class. They can't even live in the city. So they're mostly farmers living in very isolated rural communities. So in 2014, the Banyara Fellowship Trust was formed. They purchased land and they started to build an orphanage. Sunil was 20, 21, just got married. He left the Compassion program and now he was the CEO of the Banyara United Fellowship Trust and he was building a project, you know, a 300-bed orphanage. In our terms, that would have been a multi-million dollar project. Multi-million dollar. The project cost in US money and it's not quite finished yet, but almost 200,000 US. So multiply that by 50 and then you get it in their money. An amazing young man. The seed that was planted, it grew into a tree and it was beginning to bear fruit. Those of us who are gardeners, and that's not me, know when you plant a citrus tree, you have to wait a few years before you get any fruit. You've got to water it, you've got to fertilise it, you've got to look after it. It's got to be in the right position, get the right amount of sun, all that sort of stuff. And this was happening. God was weaving a tapestry together of the unexpected. And it was an amazing time. There was a principle. By this time, he'd also moved into 20 churches in 20 villages. Still, we knew nothing of this. But the lesson I get out of this, which is a fundamental lesson, you know, for church growth, a fundamental lesson for Christian living is sowing and reaping. Do you believe that? Sowing and reaping. Without it, we're nothing. And it will determine everything about who we are. Do you know sowing, we always sow and reap? Whatever you do in life, you're sowing and reaping, whether it's good or bad. You know, it says in Proverbs 22:8, whoever sows injustice will reap calamity. So if whatever you're sowing, you're going to reap. There's no neutral seed. Whatever comes out of your mouth, you're going to reap. If you're speaking negativity, what are you going to reap? If you're speaking rejection, what are you going to reap? You're just going to reap disasters in your life. So you have to be so careful. You have to be so focused what comes out of your mouth. And as we want to be witnesses for Christ, as we want to extend his kingdom, you know, we're so warned, you know, about the power of the tongue. There's life and death in the power of the tongue. We have to be careful when we speak. We have to be careful because we're sowers. Now, we should be sowing more out of Galatians 5, you know, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. That's what we need to be sowing. And that's the important lesson that I learned out of this. I knew nothing about Sunil for 13 odd years, but we sowed. We sowed faithfully. We mightn't have been active in our sowing. We should have been better at it. I should have written him more letters. I felt so guilty when I finally met him. And then I found out he has all the letters still. To him, they're his most precious possession. And those photos that we thought, doesn't matter, he's never going to see us, he kept all those photos. He was just so So the best illustration, you know, that I can think is in Luke 8, 5. It says, a sower went out to sow his seed, and as he sowed, some fell on the wayside, and it was trampled down, and the birds of the air devoured it. Some fell on the rock, and as soon as it had sprung up, it withered away because it lacked moisture. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprung up, and it choked it. And others fell on good ground, and it sprung up and yielded a crop 100-fold. And when he said these things, he cried, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. I know this parable is about, you know, sowing the gospel. You sow the gospel, and as your pastor said, it's not your responsibility of the outcome. You're sowing the gospel, and if you sow it on good seed, that person's going to get saved, and you're going to see 100-fold. And there's no greater joy than leading someone to the Lord. That's the greatest high that any Christian could have when it comes to the point of leading someone to the Lord, whether it's a total stranger. And it's easier to talk to total strangers. You try talking to your children who see you 24/7. They know your good days and your bad days. They know if you're not practicing what you preach, so to speak. You know, but we have to be sowers. In this case, we sowed into a young boy that God took us on an unexpected journey. And as you want to grow your church, you're going to have to be sowers. You're going to have to go out there into the highways, into the byways of life in this community, and you'll change lives. In late 2015, this is 13 years after I first spoke, I started to get strange things, you know, on my Facebook and messages, which I thought were spam, and I just ignored them, you know, delete, nah. Got nothing to do with me. Talking about Facebook just reminded me. There's somebody else who had a birthday too, wasn't there, on Facebook this week? So I started to get these things. In 2016, I retired from full-time employment. I was to become a great nomad. I was going to kick back and think life was just good. I was going to be sort of just go surfing and do stuff like that. But God had a different plan. I had a plan, but God had an unexpected plan. I couldn't even see it coming. This thing just blew me away. It just totally blew me away. Compassion children are not allowed to contact their parents, their sponsors directly, while they're in the program. Sunil had finished, but what I had noticed over the years is that his writing had changed. The first time it was in Telugu, and it just looks like scribbles, very neat scribbles. Then there was a bit of English, and the translator was still translating. And then at the end, there was no translator. Translation came with the letter from Compassion. It was Sunil's handwriting, because as he went to uni, he learnt to speak and write English. A miracle to learn another language. A miracle that he could now write and communicate to me directly. So I love these when you get the Compassion reports. But when Sunil had finished, he'd left the program. Compassion had let him a release letter that they write to the sponsors. I still haven't got mine yet. It's lost in mail somewhere. But what he did, he went to the board where our photos were, and he borrowed the photos because he couldn't bear not to have a photo of us. So he took his sponsored photos and he left the program. Then for months, on social media, he looked for us. We can have that first picture. If this is a picture that I was on my Facebook page when on social media. Do you think he could recognise me? I've now changed the picture. I quite liked that picture. I thought it was, you know, artistic, and you know, which if you're on Facebook, you do that. So that was the picture. We can get rid of that picture. But he couldn't find me on Facebook. But he found me on some abstract Google Chrome thing where I had a normal picture. And then after about 6 weeks of getting these random things, I said, you know, surely that name looks familiar. And then I had a picture of him. And I said, even that face looks a bit familiar. You can tell I'm really quick. You know. About 2 months later, I'm still getting them, and I said, yeah, I know that face from somewhere. So I ratted around and found out my compassion kids, and I looked, because I had a history from when he was six till he was about nine, and go, does that look like this fella? The Indians, they all look the same to me. You go, there's 1.2 billion people, they all look the same. And Terry goes, that would be him. And I thought, strange. So I messaged him back. Then bang, he messaged me back. Then we arranged a Skype date. You know, I didn't have Skype because I use other programs, so I had to download Skype, get a Skype account, and we had a Skype account. And this is the unexpected. I wouldn't describe myself as overly emotional. You know, I think that's my wife's the emotional part of me. She does all the crying. Yeah, she rings. I'm a logic. I'm left brain. You know, 30 years in a power station, left brain. Just have a problem, fix it. Don't cry about it. Come home, tell Sheree, she'll cry about it. So we get the Skype happening, you know, which is, for a retired person, getting Skype's pretty heavy. We press the button and he comes on. And he says, g'day, Dad. And I just burst into tears. For the next hour on Skype, I can't stop crying while I'm talking to him. I'm thinking, amazing, amazing. This seed that I planted, we're now connected with. And I said to Sheree at the end of the Skype meeting, I says, I can't do this crying stuff. I'm exhausted. I'm going to bed. I've got a headache. Leave me alone. We started, talking about it, and then we sort of said, you know, would you come, can you come and visit me? And I said, I would love to come to India. I'll convince Sheree to come. Sheree said, yes, she'd come to India. She was gracious. At first, I thought it was just going to be a social visit, and that would have been enough. Just to visit Sunil and to see the orphanage would have been more than I could have ever expected. But he said to me one day, because we talked every second day, we use another thing now instead of Skype a bit quicker. So he's always ringing when we talk, and he says, Dad, when you come to India, will you preach? Because he has a heart to reach the Banjara people. 6 million people, and they talk a dialect, you know, which is a bit only that they talk, and he's got a heart to reach those people in the villages. And he says, would you come and preach? And he says, you know, and I said, will you translate? And he says, yep. And I said, I'd love to preach. So he said, I'll arrange some preaching in some local churches, the churches that they've planted. Very small church, and I said, I would love to come and do that. And then he said, the pastors, over in India, the pastors are not as well trained. They've just got a heart for evangelism, but they need tools. They need to have some theology base. So he said, would you do some training for the pastors? And I'm thinking, that could be a big thing. I said, 40 years in church, I know what to do wrong. And I think I've broken every rule, upset most pastors that have been my pastor. Yeah, I can do that. So I was going to use a book called Maxwell. Also at this time, this network, this unexpected journey that God has put me on, connected me with the vicar that started this great work. So I'm friends with him, and I've spoken to him, and he's doing his PhD in theology. He's a 30-year-old man. So Sunil now is about 24 and Vicar Ryan's about 32. Now, so I'm surrounded by young people. The vicar calls me Dad also as a sign of respect, because he knows the Indians call me Dad. So I said to him, I sort of sent him, this is what I'm going to teach the pastors over there, because, you know, because I want to come under his authority. And I said, I'm using Maxwell, you know, the 21 Principles of Leadership. Have you heard that of that book? He says, oh, that's good. He says, that's a good book. He just spoke in my church. I'm thinking, oh, well, that's pretty good. So I've used it. So the opportunity went to actually do more than just visit, more than to just meet this powerful seed, but I actually had an opportunity to do ministry. And he says, preach in these things. And I spoke to him, I was being flippant, I said, I only got to have one gospel message, because They won't know if I go to a different church. They'll be easy. And Sunil sort of laughed about that. But then God put it upon my heart and he gave me the same gospel, but a different message, a different way of approaching it for each church. What I actually did was I left my sermons over there so that they could learn how to structure a sermon. They could learn how to get it together. So we did that and it was an exciting time for us. So we started off on our journey to India. And I thank for Cherie for coming. As I said, it wasn't on her bucket list. Not rural India. Five-class India would be, maybe. Would have that been on the bucket list? No. Nah. But she decided to go. The day we were leaving India, I thank for Cherie for coming. The day we were leaving for India, her mum passed away. A tragedy. We knew she was sick, she was getting better, and then she passed away. The family still encouraged us to go, and they said, we'll fix up that on your return. So going to India was a great joy and a great sadness as we were on our 20-hour journey over there. We had an expectation, you know. Why does God work so great over in India, and why is he so absent in Australia? That's the mindset, isn't it? That's how we think. Who thinks like that? You know, if you had that thought, you know, we think, you know, God's raising the dead, we hear over there in Africa, or God's doing this and God's doing that, but what's he doing in Australia? I'm here to tell you, I'm also a Gideon. And God's doing great things in Australia. Before we came up on our holiday, we did our Year 7 placements for the students. And at Gorrican High School, you'd know Gorrican High School. Gorrican High School, a state government school, over 1,000 kids. We had the Year 7 kids. The worst possible thing to do the placement, you know, we thought that we came in that door, so we thought all the kids are going out that door, so we positioned ourselves here. You know, when you do evangelism and that, it's about position. You've got to position yourself in the right place. Position yourself so people will hear. You've got to, in some cases, have the right to talk to the people, and that's by positioning. So we thought, as a Gideon, you know, this is it. We'll position ourselves here. The kids are there. I get 2 minutes to speak to them. I can't preach the gospel. And then the teacher said, oh, the bell's going to go, and then it's recess, and the kids were going to go out the door there. But I said, I want them to go out this door. But he sort of said, if you want a Bible, go get one and then leave. We were virtually mobbed. We felt like we were pushed against the wall. We couldn't get out the Bibles quick enough. About 70% we gave out Bibles to that year. So God is still working on the Central Coast. And I believe that would be the same way up here when Gideons go to school. Gideons are planning an event next year in 2018. It's called Sydney for Eternity. They're planning to give out 500,000 Bibles in Sydney. They're planning to do street witnessing on some of the hardest suburbs in the western suburbs because they want to change the spiritual atmosphere of Sydney. So things are happening in Australia. We mightn't see it, but they're there and things are happening. And that's the expectation we should have, that when we go out, things will happen. God will be there just as he is in India or wherever or any other country. But I was thinking about, you know, and saying, why is the expectation so high in this country? Why is it so high? And God sort of, you know, I've been thinking about this, and this verse came to mind, Matthew 11:12. And as for the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has suffered violence, and the violence take it by force. I've never heard anyone preach on that verse, but you might have read that verse and you look at it and go, oh, that's too difficult, I'm going to read the next one. But this is what Jesus was saying. But when you read the commentaries, you know, Christ was graphically portraying the intense excitement that followed John the Baptist's ministry. The eager, awaiting, striving and struggling of the multitude for the promised king. Remember, they wanted to take Jesus by force and make him king. You know, when John the Baptist came, behold, you know, the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and people were getting baptized in droves in the river. There was a sense of repentance. John was doing that and there was an excitement. Then Jesus comes and says, the kingdom of God is here. So people were that keen to get into the kingdom. It looked like a red light special at Kmart where the women were pushing in to get to those things. They were that keen to get into the kingdom of heaven because they wanted to flee the circumstances of their life. They were that keen to get into the kingdom of heaven because it was a message of hope, a message of encouragement. And that's the message that you bring. It's the same kingdom of heaven that Jesus was talking about. It's the same kingdom of heaven that you and I would talk about. I joined Gideon's because Gideon's is an organization where we have a monthly meeting, and one of the things of the monthly meeting is we have to say if we've had any opportunity to give out a Bible and to do witnessing, because Gideon's primary function is to do personal witnessing, and I'm no good at it. You mean So I put myself in an organisation where it encourages me to do it, where, you know, forces me to do it. Like, we do it by Bible placement, but we're still by talking to people, and we just have a tool that we can give them a Bible. So I'd encourage you, learn how to do that. Gideon's got a good book on personal witnessing. It's called Sharing Jesus Without Fear, because fear is what holds us back. We're excited to be in God's kingdom. Are you excited to be part of God's kingdom? Yeah, you should be. And so would the people that you share his kingdom with. They'll be excited to be in his kingdom. Some people might think you're, you know, a nutter. 30 years in the power station, that's where God got me to be my ministry. 30 years working with men in heavy industry. They used to call me a God botherer. And I said, I don't bother God. You know, you do because you're not talking to him. One day I was actually walking... One day I was walking through a workshop and there was a guy. God gave me sarcasm, and as an early Christian, I didn't understand that God made me this way and that's what I should use in my witnessing. You know, so I was walking through a workshop and there was a guy who called me a God botherer. He thought the earth was created by accident and all that, and he knew I believed in creation. And he says, he's walking through there talking to other guys and he wants to embarrass me. So he says, this fella talks to God, you know, God talks to him, his voice is in his head, you know, and I walk up and I said, yeah, that's true, you know, I talk to God. And then he says, he sort of being tongue-in-cheek, he says, what's God saying? And I says, I'll listen, I said, God's saying, kill the atheist. The others laughed. I took the wind right out of his sail. You know, I was still a God botherer, but that's who I am. And that's who you'll be. You'll be bothering, you won't be bothering God. You'll be bothering others, but you'll be bringing him into the kingdom. And heaven will be suffering violence because of your evangelism that you will do here as people will rush into the kingdom. I thought on the other reason, you know, why is it? Why do we have that mentality, you know, that nothing much is happening here? And nothing much is happening. As a Gideon, I get to go around to a lot of churches, and a lot of churches are really struggling. I mean, they're struggling because there's, you know, they're dying in numbers, they're old, there's no expectation, there's no vision, there's no purpose, and they're struggling. And some of the churches are struggling because it's their own demise. You go to their Bible colleges and after 4 years you come out and you don't even believe in God anymore because they've become so liberal. They've watered down the simple gospel by it, and it's like a veil, a darkness over our eyes. And in Matthew 6:23 we'll see, but if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? When we lose the passion of God, it's like a darkness comes upon us and we become different. We don't sow positive seeds. We don't have excitement about kingdom preaching, so we don't do it. So that's why that's a generalisation that overseas great things are going to happen. Here not much is going to happen. But I'm here to tell you it's the same God that's working overseas, that's working here, that's working in my little church back at home. So we went there. We went there with an open mind. We thought preaching, and we went there. I suppose I had expectations, you know, that great things were going to happen. God's going to be there. He better be. Because I can't do it. He better show up. Because it's not up to me. I'm just going to meet Sunil, and now this ministry opportunity came on. So it was great. And Sunil gave, we were there for 14 days. He gave us 2 days of sightseeing, 1 day of rest, and every other day was busy. And then we were there staying on this orphanage site, and we were surrounded by rural farmers, and they were Hindus. The first night we were there, there was a knock on the door, you know, knock, knock, knock. We opened the door. don't know you. You can't speak English. So I go, Sunil, your neighbours are here. They want a cup of sugar or something. They had this boy, you know, but they wanted prayer. They were Hindu. They weren't believers, but they knew there was a white man. For some reason, they think that we carry the anointing of God. I don't know why. They're much more spiritual and much more fervent in their prayers than us. But they were there. So we brought him in. His kid was it was hard to say whether he was oppressed or possessed by a demon. It was really hard. I mean, growing up in a Hindu house, the kid could see into the spiritual realm anyway. Sharikan sort of picked up that straight away, so we prayed for the kid, and then we ended up praying for him three times. The last time we seen him, he was looked like a healthy kid running around the village. The first time that night we seen him, he didn't look good at all, so... But we had this expectation that God was going to show up. God was going to do something good. And it was exciting. I just went and I thought, I'm going to preach the gospel. And then God is going to honour that with signs and wonders, as it says in Romans 15:19. You know, you preach the gospel. Our expectation was high. And we just do it. We pray. When you preach in an Indian church and you ask for prayer, it's not like in our church. If we have an altar call here, we're reluctant and say, no, I don't need to come forward for healing. We've got Medicare. You know, well, I don't need that, you know, I'll just borrow the money. But over in India, everyone comes for prayer. Even people who weren't even attending the church, they walk past and say, there's a prayer line. Because over there, you must understand, you know, to them, they've got like 50 million gods and they pray to all of them, but sometimes they don't see anything. And then they see a white man there with a Christian man, with a Christian God. They're thinking, maybe his God will do something for me. And that's the expectation that they have. They think, maybe his God will do something for me, even though he doesn't know my God. They're not in relationship, but he has that God's going to bless his life. And God often does touch their life and bring healing, and then brings them to the saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. We prayed for this young boy three times. We prayed for people who were, you know, we blessed children, we blessed crops, we blessed motorbikes, because some of them were so happy when they got their first motorbike because it cost them so much that they just wanted to be blessed. We prayed for sicknesses, not like the sicknesses here. When we went to... Before we left to go to India, we just became grandparents not long, so we had little Jaxie, you know, and my daughter was saying, we're going to India. She said, that's really good. And then she found out that Sunil's mum had full-blown TB. So the village had TB. She says, that's not no good. I don't want you to go to India. I'm going to keep my grandson away from you. So we had to go to the tuberculosis clinic to make sure we didn't bring any big thing back nasty. So we prayed for people with TB. We prayed for people, you know, like polio, such a disease we've wiped out here, which is rampant in India. So many people, you know, we just prayed for them. We prayed in this church, and Cherie says, as we're leaving, she said, I think the last person had leprosy, and because he had all these white spots all over him. And I said, well, that's okay, Cherie. We laid hands on him. I said, you don't get leprosy by touching, you get it by some other ways. But she still wanted to get the sanitizer wipes out. Everywhere in India, there was Cherie and the sanitizing wipes, you know. Clean your hands, don't touch your face, you know. But it was such an amazing time, and I thought, was that the reason why we're in India? I didn't see a great deal of salvation. We've seen a few people got healed, and so there was nothing like that. And I'm thinking, what was this about God? But what God was really showing me, that day, that training with the pastors, I spent 5 days with the Indian pastors, encouraging them, training them, joking with them, and just loving them, you know, that they could go out and do the work in the ministry. When we were there, we bought them all... you know, Sunil, it was just before Christmas. He says, can you buy him a Christmas gift? And we said, yeah, we'll send you some money, you buy it, and we'll just give it to him. So he bought all the pastors, because over there a pastor wears a white shirt and black pants. They all look like Mormons. Some of them have push bikes, some have motorbikes. So I was sort of joking about this, but Sunil was so happy because they looked professional. They stood out in their village. It's like we should stand out in our village. I'm not saying we have to wear a white shirt and black pants, but we should stand out in our village primarily because what we're sowing love, joy and peace, so people will see that India. So we managed to do that. So we we had that time. Our time was there that I seen in Ephesians 4:12 to equip the saints for the work of the ministry, for the building up the body of Christ, to have locally skilled people working in the local village, you know, talking Banjara to the Banjara, talking the gospel, talking kingdom principles into them, bringing them out of darkness, out of Hinduism. And you might say, oh, we don't have that darkness here in Australia. We have a more subtle darkness. It's not in your face, but it's a darkness that would rob us of our spirituality. It's a darkness that would keep us away from God just as much as Hinduism would. So that was our time there, is meeting with those pastors, encouraging them, building them up. Sunil has a vision. This seed that was planted, he has a 2020 vision, which Cherie and I support. They've currently got 20 pastors in 20 villages. They want to have, by the year 2020, 60 pastors in 120 villages. What's your vision for 2020 as this church? That's what you think of it. Do you want to have that wall pushed out that way or extended that way for the new people? That's what you should be having, a vision of expanding God's kingdom here, growing it, growing God's house, not just to have a big church, but to bring people out of darkness into light. That's the crutch of them. Out of what's the choices after death? They're not good. It's either heaven or hell. So you're wanting to take people out of, you're wanting to ransack hell and put them into heaven. And you're wanting to have the enthusiasm to do that. And it doesn't matter whether it's Hindus or drug or abuse or apathy or blindness, because we've just become liberalized in our thinking. We need to get back to the basic fundamental gospel principles. Sunil's vision is huge. 2020. The Indian Prime Minister has a vision. I don't know whether you've heard about it. You probably won't see it on any of the commercial news, but he has a vision called 2021. On the 31st of December in 2021, the Prime Minister says he wants no Christianity or Islam in India. He wants to make it a Hindu nation. So you can see the battlefield, you know, as clear as anything, you know, the lines being drawn in the sand, the dates being given. There's already persecution happening in churches in India, more so in the cities than in the rural communities. But the time will come when it will be throughout India as they push forward zealously, you know, to claim India for that. But we're claiming India for Jesus. Compassion is pulled out of India. Are you aware of that? Compassion left 145,000 children in India because they couldn't guarantee the sponsorship anymore. In India, the government introduced the Financial Currency Regulations Act, the FCRA. Compassion wouldn't be granted that number because they wouldn't pay any bribes to the Indian government, because Compassion said the money is for the children, not for the corrupt government. So the government says you cancel their FCRA, and they were unable to trade. So they pulled out of India. The school that Sunil is building has his ex-principal, who was a principal of a compassion school. He lost his job because of what's happening there. There's such pressure coming onto the churches there. And it's an amazing time that Sunil should be building an orphanage to house 300 kids when there's 145,000 kids that had lost their home. There's much that can be said. I'm just going to show you a few photos of India, so if we could start on photo. This is Sunil when we first met him. So the next one, this is him now with his family, Sashi and Ashvik, his kid. I got to nurse that kid. This is us when he met us. We stayed at the Novotel. I said I didn't want to arrive. We arrived at India 11 o'clock at night, and I said I don't want to arrive and not know one. I want to see a face that I can recognise out of the 1.2 billion. So Sunil and his brother Jeremiah came along, had a great time staying there. The next one, he took us to a bit of sightseeing, which was all great. That was some fort, and everyone thought I looked like Donald Sutherland because all these Indian people, young and old, wanted to have selfies with me. I don't know. And being an extrovert, I obliged. They took us to the movie world, you know, like Bollywood. And then this is the pastors. That's where we met them. We had a fun day just connecting with them on the level of being, like friends. So the next one, they had a banner for us, as we arrived there. We had to walk in. You couldn't get a car near the orphanage. It's too rough. And that's the orphanage when we were there. It was just bones. It's just a skeleton. That's it now, it's a bit further on with the bottom floor filled in. And that's where we stayed. That was the foreign delegates' accommodation. I needed painkillers to go to sleep because the bed was that hard. I decided that I'd take him in the night so I wouldn't have to take him in the morning. That was how Sunil supports himself. That's a crop of chilies, the orphanage in the background. That's one of the churches we preached at. You can see the women are segregated from the men. This is a traditional... That lady on the left, there's a traditional Banjara dress. They sort of have their own costume. Next one, please. That's a church in one of the pastor's front yard. We prayed for his girl. She had polio, a beautiful thing, but she's got a crippled hand. That's how they do church, in the front yard. People drove past on their bikes. They'd stop and hear me, and Sunil would interpret. There was a well next door. People would come and get water. And that's how they got their water in the village there. The next one there. That's in another church near a bigger town, so they had a bit of a building. That was a well-established church. That's the certificate we gave them when they graduated. We did the Reverend Ryan wasn't there, so he put my name on it and I could sign it since I gave him some training. So that's me giving the certificate to him. It was a formal occasion, so I wore a tie. And that was, they had a semi-Christmas with two S's there because they were just leading up to Christmas, but they're having their real Christmas one there. So it was an opportunity we had to meet the orphans, to give them a present and to celebrate with them. It was the biggest event they put on, and it was a great time, a really encouraging time for them. Next one then, that's the pastors and their wives with the gifts that we gave them, so they look good for the year in the village. You can see that me standing out the back there, that white hair. That's how you get to a conference there, five on a motorbike. So can't have any more kids than three because they won't fit on the bike. And that's the main street of the village where Sunil lived in, so no cars, just an oxen walking around. That's where Jeremiah's house, he's the senior pastor, he oversees all the churches. That's what a senior pastor's house looks like. And that's Sunil's mum, that's how she was cooking our breakfast and that, the rubbish behind and the dogs going through, so very different. And that's Cherie, that's the before and after shot. If you stay in India long enough, that's what you'll end up. So Cherie's reluctant to stay any longer than a month, I think. We're trying to work on it. I said we should buy a house there, a summer house in India, but she says no. So the next... This is it now. This is the school starter. They got their permissions through the government to start a school. So they've started the school. They've hired four teachers. This is more pictures of how it looks now. The bottom's filled in. They're working on the top. The kids stay there. That's a classroom. So he was able to get that furniture and a blackboard. That's what a month's supply of rice looks like for 300 kids if you've got to feed them for a month. It's one ton. We managed to buy that before we come away. And the next one, and that's a website if you're interested to find out more about the Banjara people. You can turn that off. Thank you. So that's basically it, an unexpected journey of a seed that's planted that shows some real principles of how they're reaching their 6 million people group. I don't know how many people live in the hinterland here. 500,000? Up here on the Sunshine Coast, 500,000 in the hinterland, something like that, a bit less. Well, then you've got an easier challenge than Sunil. You might have 250,000 where he has 6 million. But that is your mission field. You might be here this morning and visiting, since I don't know most of you, and you mightn't have known anything about that there's a kingdom that Jesus come for. So if you'd like to have prayer on that, to enter into that kingdom, there'd be someone that would love to talk you through that process of how giving your life to Jesus, coming out of darkness, the kingdom of darkness, into the kingdom of light. You might want to have prayer that for a spirit of boldness to go out and do that evangelism which you've been called to do, go into all the world. We went into India and it was a blast, and we're planning to go back. But really, My mission field is the Central Coast, New South Wales, where God has planted us. My mission field is my neighbours, the people in the Tookley community, the people that I surf with and see on the beach. They're the ones that I have to reach for God's kingdom. So you have to think of where is the people God are calling you to reach for his kingdom. Reach to come into this church for sure. Blow the walls out either side. Go two stories. But ultimately, you're not building a church, you're building God's kingdom. God's kingdom across denominations, you know. God's kingdom, you know, with all denominations that love the gospel message. Building God's kingdom for his glory, not for man's glory. So I'm going to hand over back to Darren now. So thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Pastor Darren Brown, Senior Pastor of Coast Church, Wumbai, on the beautiful Sunshine Coast of Queensland, Australia. For more messages from the heart, transcripts, and other material, visit www.coastchurch.com.au or subscribe on podbean.com. See you next week on Messages from the Heart.